Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, welcome to the Football Writers Podcast. My name is Mike Calvin. I'm joined by Tony Evans of the Evening Standard and Jonathan Northcroft of the Sunday Times. It's half time. Some managers will be chucking teacups around. Others will be quietly confident. Who's going to make the top four? Who's going down? Now let's start at the top. Chelsea are running away with it, aren't they, Tony?
Yeah, it's absolutely unbelievable, considering where they come from. I mean, in September after the Liverpool game, I've never seen a manager more downbeat than Conte. Certainly not a club like that. You know, he kept referring to finishing 10th last year and saying, you know, it was likely to happen again. And it looks as if that was going to come true when Arsenal beat them. But after Black September, they've turned it round. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's been a 15-point switch around with them and City in that time. And, you know, a full five games. And it's absolutely amazing there. And while they haven't played that well at times, there's a relentlessness about them that's impressive.
That consistency factor. OK, we all talk about 11 rings on the bounce. What are the constituent factors in that?
Well, they've had fairly consistent selection. I think they've been OK with injuries. The level of desire, the level of commitment and team play from all of them, I think it's favoured them not having the problems out through signings or anything other than good coaching and regrouping as a squad. You can see that about them. And you can see they've got some brilliant players there. You know, for me, Eden Hazard was the best player in the Premier League until last season. Kante was the best player in the league last season. And when you've got players of that quality with a team structure around, and Diego Costa also playing as well as he's doing, it's near on ideal.
Mm. I think there was a moment where Conte looked at the squad and he was obviously miffed at the buys in the summer because it never suited him at all. He looked at the squad and thought, this is never going to work. And he probably sulked for a week or two and then he thought, right, how can I make this work? And I mean, going forward, you wonder whether it can be sustained because the back three with the wing-backs, I mean, Victor Moses and Marcus Alonso, logic tells you that someone's going to get at them and get behind them and run at those centre-halves. But at the moment, you know, they're flying.
Kante, player that you know well, and obviously you spoke to him last week. What's your impression of him in terms of a man rather than a footballer? Because he's one of these players you know nothing about.
He is, and having met him and spent half an hour with him last week, I'm not sure I know much more about him. He's the most incredibly kind of unassuming guy, softly spoken, really, really humble. I mean, a lot of footballers are humble, especially from the kind of background he comes from, but he takes it to a different level. But somebody that's really very much gently focused on winning. He is a proper winner and focused on his teams, and someone that gets pleasure out of doing the jobs on the pitch rather than anything personal. Very shy whenever I sort of tried to pay him any kind of compliments. A very, very sort of simple guy, but with that shyness and that humbleness, there's definitely strength of character in there as well. And I find him fascinating. You know, to me, he's a throwback to the days when we didn't know so much about footballers. There wasn't that great exposure for them. We just knew them from what they did on the pitch, and I think Kante is one of them.
Mm. One of the lessons of the first half of the season, Tony, is that if you look at that top six, it is a top six almost now set in stone, isn't it? Mm. Is that the shape of things to come, that the Premier League is going to become even more elitist and the Leicesters of this world are going to get nowhere near them?
I think there is an opportunity for the so-called second-class clubs, you know, in the Premier League, certainly with the new television deal and the amount of money they have available. Good scouting and good management will take them a long way, you know, as we saw from Leicester. But it does smell a little bit of the Empire Strikes Back, doesn't it? The big boys are imposing themselves. I think if people have ambition to crack those six, there's a chance for them. I think the likes of Everton going forward with Mashiri's money, you know, and they're moving to a new stadium, they all fancy themselves getting into them.
January is going to be key for them.
January is crucial to them, and you know they couldn't pick up anyone during the summer. Well, couldn't pick up the people they wanted during the summer. People were asking wages which were outside their wage structure, and some of it was ridiculous. But you know, you look at, they're going to pick up the likes of Morgan Schneiderlin. I think they're going to be considerably better going forward, and they have a chance to certainly to disrupt things at the lower end of that top six.
Tony mentions Schneiderlin. I'm puzzled why he's supposedly surplus to requirements at United. What's your sense of the way that club is evolving as the season progresses?
Well, I mean, on Schneiderlin, I thought he was a very good player when he went there, but to me he looks like just one of those that hasn't been able to deal with the stage.
The wow factor of it.
Yeah, the grandeur of being at Manchester United, and that happens with players at some of those clubs. I think, in general, United, it has flipped a bit. About a month ago, I was looking at it thinking, where's this going under Mourinho? What's he actually trying to do here? Well, I think in the last month, a clearer sense of that has come about. Whether by luck or by judgment, he's found more of a formula. Michael Carrick being back in that team is extraordinarily important. And that's a worry for United, because he's 35 now, and he might prove as difficult to replace as Roy Keane was. But having him back in the team, you know, Pogba gets the ball a lot quicker in more forward areas. And then him and Zlatan, you know, when you have players of that wages you pay for, they are going to be good players. And those two combining is a fairly sort of powerful sort of combination. So, and Phil Jones being back is important. So a few things have gone Mourinho's way in terms of, you know, these weren't solutions he looked at the start of the season, but now he's got them. I think a clearer Mourinho-like United is now emerging.
What about the Rooney situation? You know, we've been hammering on at it for seems decades now, but another year, another challenge. Is he up to that challenge of actually remaining a relevant player?
Well, the one thing Wayne Rooney is always up for, it's a challenge. You know, he's one of those fellas who'll always fight, you know, till the end. Unfortunately, at United, I don't really see too much of a place for him going forward. The way they set up now, and with Zlatan up forward, I don't think what he's doing is going to work for a Mourinho side. The way, it's, you know, as Jonathan said, it's panning out. So I think He'll fight again the first team, and he'll be in the squad. But I really can't see him being a long-term, well, even a medium-term solution to what United needs up front.
It looks like his future, if he has one there, it's as a bit part player, playing on the left on Saturday. He did a really good job for the team, might fill in when Mkhitaryan or Mata or whatever is injured. It's a bit of a step down in status.
It's massive, isn't it?
Massive. It's whether he'll take that. I think once he breaks the goal-scoring record, then that might be time for him to reassess.
Well, I mean, the problem is he'd have to take such a huge cut in wages that it's hard to see him going anywhere except China.
Unless you look at it and you say you could go back to Everton. There's a nice sort of symmetry about that. And let's face it, he doesn't need the money, does he?
Well, he doesn't need the money. But, you know, I mean, the question you've got to ask is, would Koeman look at him going forward? If he's got Lukaku and can keep Lukaku, does he need Rooney?
Talked about China. I think we've got to touch on Oscar. Ridiculous money, you know, £400,000 a week, £60 million transfer fee. Are we going to see more of these deals?
Yeah, we are. I mean, I think Graziano Pelle's there on about
290, I think.
290.
Yeah. He asked Everton for 55 a year net. Yeah. So couldn't get that here. Off he went to China.
Yeah, I think these sums, from what my knowledge of the Chinese scene, they are still drops in the ocean to these Chinese corporations that own the football clubs, with the more relaxed sort of tax regime as well, where they can pretty much just pay the players up front and not worry about the other element to it. I think we will see more of that migration, but I think more significantly we'll see more and more Chinese ownership. I know we've got quite a bit already, but I think that's going to continue, and we'll see more Chinese owners in the Premier League, I think.
You're talking about big owners. Manchester City's, they were, you know, the last club for whom, you know, expense was no object. Where's that going, that project? It's a really crucial moment, isn't it?
Well, it is. I mean, they've got an aging squad, they've got a new manager, and the one thing they have got is a clear direction. The club was set up for Pep Guardiola. The whole organisation was designed for him to take it forward, and the idea that this would be a long-term thing, not a short-term hit. So if Pep does fail, in the first season or even the second season, I think they'll be fairly, if not relaxed with it, but content that there is a plan as long as there's some sort of momentum. But, you know, it's still a big job, and the money no object size of it is less crucial than it was because of financial fair play and also the Premier League television deal and given, so-called lesser clubs really big budgets. So I think it's going to be difficult for City.
The thing about money, it's what you do with it. To me, they've got a brilliant manager, brilliant structure, very poor recruitment. And until they start identifying better players and using that money, the muscle isn't really coming to bear.
Well, recruitment's one of the big bugbears, isn't it? You know, there's a lot of lazy recruitment going on across, even at the top of the Premier League.
With City, what do they need to win a title?
Well, on the pitch, they need some better centre-halves, I would say. And what they need is to replace that generation who are still their best players, Aguero, Silva, Yaya Toure and the absent company. I mean, they still haven't really improved on that. Apart from De Bruyne, they need a clearer identity because I think Guardiola, as he's learning, is chopping and changing a little bit now. And I've lost a bit of sight of where they are. But I just don't think all of that's going to come together this season. I think you're looking at a summer transfer window and Pep going into another season with a firmer idea.
It was quite interesting, you know, when they beat Arsenal just before Christmas, Pep made a comment about the fans. Oh, at least they didn't leave 15 minutes early like they usually do. Is there a cultural thing going on there? Is there an issue with, a tourist club?
Well, to a certain extent. But I think that's the same with any of the big clubs in the Premier League. I think there is a perception that City haven't quite got the fan base that, say, United have. And, you know, we do see empty seats at the Etihad, even though City fans hate to have the attention drawn to them. And since the Kippax went and Main Road, City's never been the sort of place where you go and expect a hostile crowd, you'd expect a huge atmosphere. And and I think I think that the ground as well militates against that. So I think Pep's been a bit harsh, really.
When we look at corporate football grounds, we always think of Arsenal, don't we? Arsenal and Spurs, is there something missing in North London?
Yes, different things actually. If you could combine the two teams, you'd have proper title contenders. Arsenal have just got that, and they would hate to admit it, but they've just got that mental, psychological flaw. As we saw last season when they were in position to win the league, took the selfies after beating Leicester, fell apart. This year, hit the top of the league and then lose two games, 2-1, where they've led. And what they're not good at, they show bottle for me, they show character, when they're almost not expected to do anything. Second leg against Bayern Munich, blah, blah, blah. Probably happened this season. They'll do really well in the second leg after losing the first one 2-0. It's when they're in a winning position that the silverware's at hand. There's something missing in them. And with Spurs, I think they've got all the spirit and fight that you want, but probably just lack a little bit of creative quality.
I got on the Arsenal bandwagon. I thought they'd show more fight this season than they had in the last 10 years of, the Wenger regime. They've got a great shape when he's got his first team out. And the number of late goals that they scored, to either win games or draw, I thought, this is a different Arsenal. And then, instead of Black November, they had Black December. And two games from winning positions. But what is stunning in both of them is Ozil, the way he plays and his demeanour. People on the television pundits were drawing attention to him walking around against Man City, and you'd expect better from him. But, he reminds me a little bit of Glenn Hoddle. He's very pleased with himself, and he's very pleased with his own ability. But when you talk to all the old players from the 80s, and you talk about Hoddle, they always go, we always knew we'd get space.
You talk to the England players who played under him as well, the same.
They always go, you knew you'd get space with him. And you talk to one England player, asked him about the Maradona goal in the Azteca. I said, why didn't you bring him down? He said, I was knackered. He said, it was, I said, and you've been doing all Glenn Hoddle's running? I went, and he went, no. But I mean? The start about Ozil, I saw him at the end of last season against West Brom, and he hit this ball, and I realised, as he hit it, he followed through, and it was like a golfer, and he just held his position for a second. It was a great ball. Yeah. But, instead of making the run to get, he's just admiring himself. Stop it, son. We don't care about the assists. Score enough goals to bring the title to the Emirates.
Yeah. Is he worth the money?
Oh, he's worth it as a watch. Whether he's worth it as a winner, I'm not quite sure. I think Sanchez is more worth the money than he
well,
is.
Well, without a doubt.
If you had to make the choice, and they might have to with wages, then probably Sanchez.
Do you know, if I want to watch freestyle and footballers, I'll go to the circus. I want to watch winners.
Right. We look at the other end of the table. Poor old Hull. Mm. You can't see any way back for them, can you?
Well, not really. I mean, they gave us a brief flicker of hope at the beginning of the season before Phelan was appointed. But then it's, you know, and no wonder. A club in crisis in the boardroom. There's no clear direction for the ownership. The fans are up in arms, and quite rightly so. And they haven't got enough players. They didn't have enough players when they started the season. And they won't have enough players after January. And so just being there is, just getting there was an achievement, but they're going to go back down and it needs a new owner in there to give the club a sense of purpose, a sense of identity that doesn't involve the word Tigers, a direction. And it's a shame because, you know, it would have been lovely to see them stay up.
Mm, because there was this great romantic rise, wasn't there, from the old sort of third, fourth divisions. That were, you know, the romance has ended.
Yeah.
And it was a strange one because you've got a local owner who in theory should understand the area, but he hasn't. He's just lost it completely.
No, and him and the, you know, it's been a divergence, hasn't it? There was a point in time where he was right, you know, in tune with the fans and a bit of a local hero, and he's become entrenched and they've become entrenched. You know, they're in the right and he's not. And it just doesn't work. It doesn't work, especially at a club of that nature. We've seen it at Charlton. When an owner starts taking on the community and the fans that it represents, it's only going to go one way. It does affect the players. It does affect what happens on the pitch.
No doubt, and there is a fundamental problem, is that if an owner buys a football club and thinks, this is just another business, it's not. Where it is, it's a flag bearer for the community. It has emotional contacts with the people who go and support the club. And if you break those bonds, it's a very dangerous game.
Well, it's a community asset, as you say, Tom.
And it should be protected as such.
Yeah. A new owner would mean a new manager, wouldn't it? I do feel sorry for Mickey Phelan.
I do, because I think he's done as good a job as you could possibly do, and he's probably masked a lot of failings that the owners should be thankful for, but he probably will pay with his job when a new guy comes in, and I'm not sure if anything's going to change, really. He might just have to hope that he'll get his next job on the back of what he's done. I mean, he, enormous dignity, a real football man, sets up his teams nicely. I think he's doing all he can.
And Swansea, another club, you know, at odds with itself. You look at it, it's no coincidence Gary Monk is getting Leeds up into the Championship promotion contenders. That was the worst day's work they ever did, getting rid of him, wasn't it?
Oh, yeah, but it was rumbling on for a while before that.
Yeah, it was.
I mean, it was the, you know, he was being touted around for England, and yet all you're hearing from South Wales was that he was going to be sacked at Swansea. And I think when you get people in the boardroom who want to take responsibility for success and signings and the downgrade the manager's role in that, it's a dangerous situation.
With Swansea, there were tinges of xenophobia about the criticism of Bob Bradley. Now, I take the point, came from the second division in France, did okay in Norway, was okay with the US national team, so therefore not experienced at the highest level. But has he been given, you know, a bad deal here?
I think he has. I mean, I think the CV is, it's not overwhelming, but it's a plausible enough CV for someone to get a Premier League job. I think there's a lot too much focus on how he looks, how he talks, his American phraseology.
What, the PK is?
The PK is the road games. But who cares, really? Mm. You know, if we would indulge an Italian or a Spanish manager if they used their phrases. Yeah. It's our attitude towards Americans and soccer. You know, he's just taken over a broken machine.
We even indulge British-born managers who speak more English. We talk about the project and we're in a good moment. So, you know, it's the criticism of Bradley is unfair. I mean, I first come across him nearly 20 years ago. And he's a very clear thinker and a very good communicator. And he's not a chancer that they've dropped in from America to. Yeah. But what he has got is a squad that's unbalanced, that is probably a little bit disillusioned with the way things have gone, and are perhaps not given their all, if you say gently. And he's struggling to inject some confidence into them.
The defending is horrendous.
Yeah.
And it seems to me that they've only got one player, that's Sigurdsson.
Yeah, yeah, he stands head and shoulders above them, doesn't he? There's a lot of veterans there now, guys who are, you know, on a last paycheck, a Premier League paycheck. It's a horrible cocktail. A bit like, you know, they are a club again who, that sort of phalanx of really good players that took them up are still probably the best characters they've got, but they're just too old now. The Britons and the Rangels, losing Williams was a big miss. Mm. I just think they've generally lost their way. You look at that squad, you're not quite sure what it is, and you think Swansea had this clear style of play. You now look at them, you're not sure what that is either.
No one wants to take responsibility there. They're all...
Yeah, you know, right.
Yeah. Now, there is a theme emerging here. If you look at Sunderland, Ellis Short wants to get out. Uh-huh. 170 million, we're told, is a sort of an asking price. David Moyes has done well in, you know, within the perspective of that club, but he's got no money in January.
No. Mm. And the owner wanting to sell and disengaging is the worst thing to happen to that club, because it reminds me of Randy Lerner at Aston Villa. And again, that filters into a culture. When you know the guy in overall charge actually can't be bothered with it anymore, there's a problem there. I think David has got the bit between his teeth now. Very difficult beginning there. He's found a team. You know, he's even using people like Anachebe, who, you know, who would have thought that? But he's got a structure. He's got a bit of spirit going. And I think they might just be okay on the back of some good pros and a good manager there. But, you know, as he predicted at the start of the season, it's going to be a pretty gruesome struggle either way.
It's going to be touch and go because, again, there's parallels with Villa.
Yeah.
Because under the other Short ownership, the recruitment was a complete and utter mess. And he consistently backed plans that were, how should we put it, weren't very good, let's just say, like, you know, and the managers who have been left holding the baby look like they're failing really badly. But actually, they're getting more out of that squad than they should have. And Sam last year and...
They pay a lot of money there. That's one of the problems they've had historically with recruitment. They call it the Sunderland tax to get people to go there. Yeah. They pay that little bit extra. But what that creates is players who know that the money they're on is the best they're ever going to get in their career. And they don't want to move, and that again filters into attitude.
Mm. If we're talking then of Sunderland maybe edging away, which club is sleepwalking to disaster?
At the moment, Palace are.
Yeah, I agree with that.
I think they're going to change manager. I like Alan Pardew a lot, and I don't want to sort of, you know, predict anyone's doom, but the soundings that you hear aren't very good for him.
I don't think it's predicting doom. I mean, everyone talks about 2016 being a bad year. For Crystal Palace and Alan Pardew, it's been the worst.
Well, statistically, the worst record of all 92 clubs.
You know, on New Year's Day last year, they were fifth in the Premier League and talking about Champions League, you know, and suddenly they just went down the pan. And you go to see them and you can see why they're uncertain in defence. I do have a little bit of sympathy for Pardew.
Yeah.
They drop, whenever they're in the lead, they drop back and invite people in.
Yeah.
And he's waving them up the pitch, but there's no confidence there.
Yeah, I think they will change manager. Mm. They've got Benteke, they've got Zaha, they've got Scott Dan at the back, they've got some decent players.
Scott Dan's regressed though, hasn't he?
Yeah,
he's had a poor run.
Yeah, he has, but there's a good player in there, for sure.
But the thing is, what keeps sides up is not Scott Dan's of the world, it's the pace and the goals.
It's the scorers,
and they've got both.
They do.
And they should easily be mid-table. They should be in the top half of the table.
They need Kabay to wake up as well. I mean, that's a player of the class that could keep them up. But if they're going to be okay, I look at a couple of teams. I think Watford might just be the one. You know, there's usually a team that sinks a bit. They've lost five of the last seven games. They're not playing badly or anything, but there just seems to be a little edge lacking there, and I have got question marks about the manager and his experience of the league and how good he really is. So I just wonder if they might be the ones.
And
that
the strikers who were so good last year have dropped off.
Yeah, they have.
Yeah. Well, Igalo's sort of disappeared off the radar, hasn't he?
And Deeney isn't quite firing like he did.
Is that the weakness of this whole business plan? You know, it's all very well to ship in Carlos Kickerball here and Carlos Kickerball there, but there's no cohesive shape or identity, and that's got to get to them in the end.
That's what's getting tested now, isn't it? That's what will be tested if they get drawn into the relegation battle. And Deeney hasn't been playing well, but actually he's enormously important to that club.
Oh, yeah.
Because if you lose him, you lose that
I think he's the best captain in the Premier League.
Yeah, what he does for that team. Yeah. You know, now, if you take him out and you really are looking at a collection of, I don't want to use the word mercenaries, but, you know, guys with no identity.
Well, they're not here for their health, are they? Let's put it that
way.
Other clubs, West Ham, all over the road, aren't they?
Well, yeah, I mean, and that's another place where we could see a change in manager. It wouldn't take another long run of games to cause them to act. I mean, before Christmas, they got themselves a couple of 1-0 wins against teams that they should beat at home. They were crucial. You know, so beating Burnley at home was a big, big deal for them. Had those two home games gone wrong, then you could have seen them, you know, drop the axe on Bilic. Now, there is a great sense that what Bilic did last year that worked so well isn't working with the players now. And he needs to show us he's got a change of tone, a change of methods. And essentially, just shouting at people doesn't always work. It starts to wash over their heads. Mm. You've got to instill them with a belief.
So the manager, especially at the bottom end of the table, is critical.
Yeah.
Now, that's why I think Burnley will stay up, Sean Dyche.
And I agree with you. He was a very good manager to start with, and he's an even better manager now. He's had experience at the Premier League. And I think they've just got a little bit more savvy because of him. They'll pick up their home points. Away from home, they've been dreadful, but a few other teams have been dreadful too. I think they'll pick up enough home points. They've got a fantastic spirit there. They've got some really good pros. They were close last time with a squad that doesn't compare to this one. So I think they'll grind it and they'll just have enough.
Yeah, if they go down, it won't be Dyche's fault.
No.
It'll be the owners who will be happy to be a bounced up and down club and happy to take the money and not reinvest it. So it's Dyche. If they do go down, I'm sure we'll move on to better things fairly quickly.
So it's make your mind up time, chaps. Top four, bottom three, please. Tony?
A top four. I still think there's going to be lots of changes in there. I think people drop points and they'll beat each other. I think Arsenal will have a revival. I'm going to go for Arsenal. I'm going to say Chelsea in second, Man City in third, Liverpool fourth.
Wow. Well, I've learnt two things. Never predict Arsenal for the title. And never predict them to drop out of the top four either. So I'm going to go for Chelsea, Liverpool. I think they're the two outstanding teams, Arsenal. And I think United are going to just come in there ahead of City and Spurs in fourth.
All right. Well, I had Chelsea a close second to City at the start of the season. I was wrong. Chelsea champions, followed by Liverpool, City and Arsenal. Now, what about the drop?
Oh, I think all of Devon Berries. I can see Swansea going down with them. And depending on when they get rid of Pardew, I think Palace are gone.
Yeah. Well, Hull and Swansea are down. Depending on who Palace get as manager, I think they might just keep them up. I've got some idea. Watford.
Hull, Swansea and Palace. Thanks for joining us here on the Football Writers Podcast.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.